The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
I call it throw up ball. The right way to play a game like this, just throw it out there and get a penalty.
166 yards of penalties. Yeah. What do you make of that?
Well, this will probably be arguably the most watched game other than the Super Bowl. And I hate it that it got down to just throwing the ball up and getting the penalties to get your big play. This is not a criticism of. Really not a criticism of the rules. It is a criticism of the discretion of how you use them in one play. Everybody knows you can call a penalty on every play many different ways every time the ball is snapped. And so you have to have a feel for what you're trying to do with the ball game.
Jerry Jones gingerly tiptoeing through that minefield. Don't want to get hit with a fine,
right?
That may, you know, affect the monthly budget on the yacht or anything like that. You just don't want to be in the super yacht. You don't want to put any crimp in the overall financial portfolio of Jerry Jones. But he was careful not to criticize the rule, but the application. But the bottom line is he wasn't happy about the defensive pass interference penalties called against his team on Thanksgiving. 38 and a half million people watched. There were almost that many flags thrown that day. But, Anthony Brown committed 4 defensive pass interference penalties,
right,
and they were all defensive pass interference.
Right, that's the problem.
It's not like we're saying, oh, boy, that was a bad call. No, he ran into the guy.
Listen, I love what Jerry said there. I think when he's talking discretion, common sense, he'd like to see that used a little bit more. That's the biggest issue to me right now. You know, it's not the true applications of the rule. Now, I don't think it holds true to that game in that particular situation. I don't. Like you said, I never looked at any of those pass interferences and went, man, that's stupid. Like that's just, both guys hand fighting. They shouldn't call that. I thought every one was clearly pass interference. So, that's getting into a little bit where I just want to go, no, they need to teach their guys not to pass interfere, and the game will be a little bit better to watch. But we do see not proper discretion used all the time, and common sense is just out the door right now. I could sit here and go crazy with the officiating right now. I really could. It really bothers me.
Oh, I hear you on Sundays. Yeah, let me say this.
Yeah.
If it is a game of throw-up ball on Thanksgiving, throw-up for a very different reason,
yeah,
than all the food you ate before the game, but why not tell Dak Prescott to just throw deep passes to CeeDee Lamb or CeeDee Lamb didn't play, but whoever was available.
Yeah, I got you.
Run a 9 route and throw the ball up. Do the same thing.
Yeah.
And stop, underthrow it just a little bit so the defensive back runs into you, and boom, you pick up 40 yards of field position. I mean, if that's how they're calling it that day, adjust your play calling to try to take advantage of some of the yardage that the officials are handing out repeatedly like they did against the Cowboys. All right, but that tees up this week's After Further Review. And we're driven by the calls that really stand out. Sometimes it's a decision that isn't interesting and requires further explanation. Sometimes it's just a bad call. Here's one that we're going to start with one that I was fascinated by, given all the talk
about. Amazing. It's It's amazing.
The taunting rule.
Mm-hmm.
And we just saw last week, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pointing at the opponent. Clear, no-brainer, 15 yards. And my big criticism of the rule, look, because they're not going to change the rule.
Right.
Okay, if this is the rule you want, you have to apply it consistently. And of all teams, it was the Patriots. Kendrick Bourne with that incredible catch and run. 0.3% chance, according to Next Gen Stats, of taking it to the house when he got it to 36. He has a juke and then another juke, and he gets that great block from Jacoby Myers, and he has the stiff arm. But then right there,
he knew it right away. Look, he pulls it back.
Right
he's like,
there.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Belichick's going to kill me. Look.
But he flashed it.
He did it.
And that's exactly what they're penalizing guys for. And I haven't been pointing it out because I wanted to see him get penalized. It just proves how ludicrous the rule is if that isn't penalized, because that's exactly what they're supposed to be penalizing. And it'll be very interesting, Chris, to see whether or not the league is willing to admit to the world that they screwed it up by fining Kendrick Bourne. Are they going to cover it up by not fining him for taunting? Or are they going to implicitly admit by hitting him for $10,000 for doing exactly the same thing that Clyde Edwards-Helaire did to the opponent last week? The same thing, not even the same thing, that Cassius Marsh did a few weeks ago when he got fined. Posturing, thou shalt not posture. So that's my point. I don't like the rule. Nobody likes the rule. But I hate the fact that the rule isn't being consistently and fairly applied.
That's the problem. That's what's going to drive coaches. That's what drives coaches crazy right now. You know, that's the number one thing I get complaints about with coaching friends is just you don't know what to expect on a weekly basis right now from the referees. One week, this is fine. The next week, it's a totally different crew, and that's completely off limits. But something that was off limits to the last crew is now on limits with this crew, and it's hard to coach your damn football team that way. And that's where we get back to full-time refs. Thank you. Please. Thank you. But it's amazing.
And yeah. Well, or Sky Judge, because maybe it happened so fast that
they don't see it all the
people
way.
On the field didn't see it. But
right.
You know who saw it? People watching TV.
Yeah.
Because I saw it immediately, and I'm sure you saw it immediately.
Yeah.
Anybody who was watching the game saw it immediately. There it is. Directed at the opponent. And there's no minimum time limit in the rule that I'm aware of. It's not like, you get 2 seconds. No, you get 0 seconds. You're not supposed to do it, whether it's sustained 2 fingers or 1 finger, as the case may be, or whether it's just that.
Yeah.
Even if you're just doing that, it's supposed to be a foul under this big deal point of emphasis the NFL has made. So that's disappointing to me because, look, here, what should have happened is, I mean, the Patriots went up 26-13. They should have been kicking off from their 20. Even though the Titans took the ball all the way down and had a fourth and goal that resulted in interception,
right.
It still should have been an easier path.
Yeah.
To fourth and goal from the two.
I get you.
And if you're not going to call it, then take the rule off the books. You can't just call it some of the time. You got to call it all of the time or get rid of the rule. All right, let's move on to Tom Brady's return to Indianapolis. He had a quarterback sneak on first and goal from the one. With 13 minutes left in the second quarter of the game, he was hit by Andrew Sendejo, a guy who has been fined plenty of times by the NFL for illegal hits. In came Sendejo with the drop the shoulder and hit Tom Brady as he's trying to get to the end zone. What did you think of this one?
Listen, I don't like it. I don't, you know, because again, if Tom Brady was on somebody's body parts here and still had a little footing, he'd be pushing forward and still trying to get it, like he's even doing right there. So now they want the defender to just let up and not let him inch forward. I don't like it. Again, it's I know it's Tom Brady and we're trying to protect the GOAT, who gets more bullcrap calls than anybody. I don't. And a quarterback sneaks a big part of their football game. You see that play happen a lot where, you know, quarterbacks are on top of someone or something like that, and now they continue to drive forward and their own team pushes them forward. So here's a guy being, you know, maybe a hair aggressive. I get it. He doesn't try to hit with his head or anything like that. I don't like that call.
He did exactly what you said. He did the technique you're supposed to use.
He turned his body completely. He used all his shoulder. Exactly right. I don't agree with that call. I don't. Not at all.
Think of what that would have looked like if your dad was trying that in 1985.
What?
There was a defensive back in position to keep him out of the end zone.
What?
That would have been Andre Waters' missile. 100%.
100. I mean, listen, I think the NFL should pay my dad and Jim Kelly and Steve Young and Joe Montana $5 extra million. You screwed over their careers. You had to cut them short. If you protected them the way they're getting protected now, damn, my dad would have played another 4 or 5 years in the NFL. It's ridiculous. That's ridiculous right there. It's football. And they're bordering right now on, like, it's borderline two-man touch with the quarterbacks. And that's where it drives me crazy.
I'll look at it this way. If the guy who was trying to score in that spot wore number 34 and not number 12.
100.
It's not even a conversation.
Not even a conversation. 100%. Nobody even talks about it. We go right by. But it's 12. I mean, listen, we saw... You know, I mean, yeah, 12 gets a lot of benefit of the doubt. You know, he's like.
And look where the flag came from.
Right.
It came from one of the people who is there to protect the quarterback.
Right.
It came in from behind the play, not somebody who was down, you know, on either side of the scrum, who's in a better position to see what Andrew Sendejo did. And it was like, hey, this is a quarterback sneak. Let's play that again. It's like, almost like I got my hand on the flag ready. I see the formation here. There's a chance 12 is going to sneak it. I'm ready to take care of anybody that dares to strike Tommy. Watch it come in. Boom. Well, maybe it didn't come in as fast as I thought, but still, it comes in from behind the play. From somebody who's there to protect number 12.
Yeah, 100%. Yes. You made the point. If it's a running back, we don't talk about it. It's overprotected. Hey, listen, I still go back to that Super Bowl against the Rams with John Perry, who I think is an amazing ref. But remember, Aaron Donald threw him to the ground. He's like, oh, don't throw him like that. Don't you do that. I don't like that. I don't. I would literally be getting to the point right now where I'm telling you, if I was the head coach of the team, yeah, NFL would be fining me a lot because I would be like, screw it, I'm making a lot of money. I'm going to say some things here.
Tread lightly.
I'm just saying if you had a quarterback sneak down in those, all right, so what, he got another foot, you know, because of the penalty? I'd tell my guys to tee off on quarterbacks. I'd go tee off, green light, tee off. Take your best shots. I would. Right now, that's what I would do. You want to put them in the quarterback sneak on the 2-yard line, the 1-yard line? Fine. We're going to hit them no matter what. And if we get a penalty, we don't give a damn. You get a foot. I would start doing that stuff. I would get my licks in on these quarterbacks when I can.
That was Chris Sims.
That's right. I'm going to keep saying it, too. You can guarantee it.
But look, this is that double standard that we have seen for the past few years now, where the quarterbacks try to take unfair advantage of the rules that protect them behind the line of scrimmage. The defenders get all confused about what they're allowed to do and not do because they're conditioned
afraid
to expect a flag for breathing on the quarterback who's in the defenseless posture, mm-hmm. that when he deliberately surrenders the protections, they're afraid to hit him. Even though the moment you cross the line of scrimmage with the ball in your hands, you are no different than the guy who was in the tailback position, who got a toss sweep and ran into the teeth of the defense. So I understand what you're saying, but again, it's Chris who's saying tee off on the quarterbacks, not me. Hey, Micah Parsons, about this?
Now we're getting to nothing the passers, right?
Passer time.
Here we go.
This is Micah Parsons from Thanksgiving hitting Derek Carr. And let's have a look at Derek Carr. This is one that is very difficult for me. And look, Tony Romo contradicted himself on this one because we do have a forcible blow to the head with the wrist forearm of Micah Parsons. You see it there. The problem is once the quarterback leaves the pocket, he's still protected against a forcible blow to the head or neck. I'm not saying that you should be allowed to blow up the quarterback the way that James Harrison did to Colt McCoy, and that would be a foul for other reasons in today's NFL. But, you know, other protections are turned off when you leave the quarterback. Forcible blow to the head or neck when you leave the pocket, when the quarterback leaves the pocket. It's tough for me because I think the rule was appropriately applied here. I wonder whether or not that rule should be changed and you forfeit the protection against the forcible blow to the head or the neck when you choose to leave the pocket, Chris. Yeah, well, that's where I'm struggling on this
one. Well, I'm all for you know, that rule as far as the forcible blow to the head or neck. Now, to me, that's not forcible. That's not. His wrist hit his helmet? What? That to me is not forcible, let alone
well, he's falling into it as well.
And he's falling into it, and he's bringing the ball back. To me, you know, when you watch it and bring it up again, you know, Micah Parsons, I think, is getting ready to – he's raising his arm because he's thinking he might swat the ball or bat the ball. He's trying to do something like that, let alone now he's also trying in the act to protect himself so his own knees don't get crushed by Derek Carr or his friendly fire, the other guy in his football team. I mean, he's really bringing his arm in there to go, oh, no, I'm going to get hit by my own guy here and protect himself to a degree. The forcible blow was Derek Carr falling to the ground and putting his head around Micah Parsons' knee. That was the only problem to me. Again, this is where I'd like to see common sense a little bit more. That's not a forcible blow. That's not. And Derek Carr was great in doing that right there.
Oh, and then he grabbed his neck, and then he was smiling
it was
on
great.
The way back to the
huddle.
I mean,
they know.
Knew.
The quarterbacks know.
He knew.
They know. They play it up right now. And I would, too, if I was playing. I'd get it because I want the free 15 as well. I want to win the game. But that, to me, is where I'd like to see common sense, you know, discretion, as Jerry Jones would say, and not call that.
We saw Andrew Sandejo do what he's supposed to do in a situation like the one he found himself in, where he turned his body away, didn't go in helmet first into Tom Brady. And I say that because with Micah Parsons, you know, the question becomes, well, what should he have done differently in that spot? And the answer, whenever the answer is not what you did, no, I need to know something.
Yeah, there's no answer. Exactly.
Specific.
Right.
What should I have
right.
done?
No.
When quarterback is coming at my knees, running the ball, maybe he's going to throw it,
right.
he's falling down,
right.
what am I supposed to do there?
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the way? And then he somehow doesn't fall, and he tucks the ball away, and he runs for 15 yards. So what am I supposed to do in
yeah.
that spot
no.
to avoid a foul? I guess that's the other question I have. I just don't like the idea that the forcible blow to the head and neck continues to be a prohibition when the guy leaves the pocket and is approaching the line of scrimmage. Because there are certain blows to the head and neck that become unavoidable right when he's on that cusp of
yeah.
transitioning into a run.
That's
it's
it
an
is.
Immediate transformation under the rules.
Right.
I think it needs to be more gradual, that there needs to be a better recognition when you've exited the pocket, you're becoming a runner. It's not just when you hit the line of scrimmage, you're becoming a runner when you leave the pocket.
No, agreed. I agree with everything you said there. And just another case of rewarding bad play on offense, to take a page out of what Tom Brady said earlier this year. We didn't protect that well. Nobody was open. 15 yards. You know, it's horrible. It's a horrible call by the refs. Horrible. Horrible. Free 15 for Oakland or Las Vegas. Horrible.
Let's go to Sunday Night Football. Jadeveon Clowney, the Browns pass rusher, with a hit on.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Nothing to passer alert.
Oh, my gosh.
Nothing to passer alert. Lamar Jackson not long ago couldn't get these calls. Now he's getting them all the time,
oh
so I
my.
Guess that's good for him.
I mean.
But what was this?
What? He didn't even take a step. There's not even a step. I mean, it's one step, a half a step. It's a pitiful call. He hits nothing. What did he hit? What did
no
he
helmet
hit?
Involved.
Nothing.
It was a shoulder to the chest and a guy who was off balance. So the fact that he was off balance put him on the ground.
Yes. I mean, you know, there you have a chance to be in third and long. Bad offensive play again. Reward the offense. Reward. Hey, let Lamar Jackson get some more stats and everything. It's pitiful. The rules are so skewed to the quarterbacks right now. It's absolutely redonkulous. It's not ridiculous. It's redonkulous. It's pitiful. I don't know if that's not legal. Then damn, I don't know. Maybe I just I don't know.
Chris, yeah. I say this jokingly,
yeah.
but it becomes less and less of a joke to me. The only way we're going to have true consistency with these calls is if they make roughing the passer the same as roughing the punter, where once the ball's out, you just can't touch him, and then we know what the rule is. Then we know that if you do hit the guy in the chest with your shoulder, you're going to get flagged and make it five. Make it running into the passer and roughing the pass. Do that. If we're going to throw 15 yards consistently for roughing that isn't roughing, then just change the rule.
Because that's
pocket.
How they're applying it. They're applying it as if it is
you're
the roughing
right.
the punter rule.
You're kind of the right. It's disgusting. It's really disappointing as somebody that loves football. It's as disappointing as they can get. It's Lamar Jackson, and he's outside the pocket. The greatest runner
from Sunday night
in the history of the sport. Oh, no. There's so many bad ones this week. We don't have a long enough show to show them all. That's the problem.
I know. I'm looking at the list, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm
there's
saying,
so many.
Pete,
no,
what are we going to do
Pete
here?
Pete will tell you. I have five other boat. Submissions that would go, this is ridiculous. Let's go. Let's go to the other one. Let's go to the Ravens'
one.
Other
Let's
one
Let's just start
here.
Showing them. Let's start showing
just
them.
Start
here we
showing
go.
Them,
Tyus
right.
Bowser on Baker Mayfield. Same game, not long after. I guess this is the make-good call.
It might be. You're right. I don't know what it is. Make-up call for illegal hitting the quarterback too hard. Hey.
No. This one did have some helmet to helmet to it. See that? See the
I don't
had
know.
Some helmet to helmet.
I don't know
Look
about that.
Look at his head. Look at his head.
Well, he's getting hit by a 250-pound man that's running hard. I don't know if it actually hit. And again, these are big people with big heads. Like, it might touch every now and then. I don't know what people want to say. And I don't know if that necessarily hit his head. I don't.
Spoken like a big person with a big head.
Exactly right. That's right. And that is not what the rule was intended for. Pitiful call. Pitiful. Absolutely pitiful. Now, fantasy world will love it because, yeah, the offense gets to keep going and great. But, you know, they're ruining the league with this crap. Ruining it. Horrible.
Let's go to Thanksgiving night. Ed Oliver, Bills defensive tackle with a roughing call on Trevor Siemian. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
There's Siemian back to pass. And we're just so used to that now. Anytime we see the hit, we expect the flag. And I don't see any helmet.
No,
helmet
maybe
there.
The helmet nicked his helmet again. It's a 6'3" human being who has a big head, and they're wearing helmets, so it looks like he does. I mean, it doesn't look like he hit his helmet.
If I'm the defensive line coach of the Bills, and that would be bad news for any Bills fan, but I would say when you're getting around to that point where you're making the final push to the quarterback, just keep your head up. Don't dip it at all. Keep your head up. You're not bracing for impact with another guy your size. You don't need to brace. Just keep your head up.
They're in a,
and
I know.
Shove it.
Maybe. You're right. It's
easier said than done.
It's easier said than done. I mean, his head is pretty straight up. He's not that leaned over. But what they're also scared of is if I hit him in the chest and low and now happen to fall on him, that's also going to be a penalty. So they're in a no-win situation right now. And again, I'd like to state, that is not what the rule was implied for or put in the NFL. Pitiful call. I mean, how many times are we going to see offenses be pitiful and get 15 yards because of it? I mean, it's just...
Well, here's one where we didn't.
Oh, well, this
same
is,
game.
Well, yeah, this is unreal. This is unreal.
Same game. Earlier in the game, Saints defensive lineman Christian Ringo hits your boy Blue low and isn't called.
That was hilarious. And you're idiots, ref. You're an idiot. You're all idiots. You're all idiots. I have not.
Is he saying somebody blocked him into him? What's he saying?
No,
there?
He's going, your leg's still there. You're okay. Well, I was only if you lost a leg was I going to call that.
Oh,
I mean,
you have
what?
Another one.
Of all the ones to be called.
Leg, you got another one.
Of all the ones not to be called, that's the one. I mean, it's ridiculous. These guys are clueless. You almost ruined their season. If there's anyone that was actually roughing the passer that we've showed so far, there it is. Call it.
What's he pointing at there? I want to know the explanation. See, this is why
they're overwhelmed.
That referee should have to submit to a press conference after the game, after every game,
what?
Just like every coach and
right.
every player has to. I want to know what the hell that guy was thinking in that play and what's he pointing at.
It's the I don't know either. You're right. This is where, again, it goes back to the full-time refs, and these people need to be held accountable on a weekly basis, not like, oh, I'm on a conference call while I'm doing my other job and I'm kind of listening, but I'm not. It's ridiculous. Out of all the ones we've just showed, that was the only one that was roughing the passer, and it wasn't called. I mean, disgusting. I'm so annoyed by the NFL right now, I don't even know. I really don't even know what to say anymore.
We got a few more, Pete. Do we have time for them, or do we need to go? Pete? We
got
to go.
All right, we got some other horrible calls by the NFL. Well, maybe we'll release them to the public.
Yeah, they get
I think they get the point. But just in case you're curious, Hassan Reddick hit on Tua Tagovailoa, Jerry Tillery hit on Teddy Bridgewater, and also Von Miller on Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, my gosh. Another pitiful one. Oh, my gosh.
Nothing the passer called. Let's show the Von Miller one because, I mean, this is one where you're saying your guy with his broken toe, not COVID toe,
right.
With his broken toe, your guy should not have been flagged for this hit that he took. Let's take a look at it. Where's Von Miller? There's Von Miller. Here he comes. Aaron Rodgers throws it.
It's a joke.
I'm always looking for that helmet-to-helmet that can – he got popped in the jaw there.
He did.
I know. He got popped in the jaw.
I get it. But, see, again, it's not like he's intending to do it, all right? Like,
doesn't matter if you're intending.
I can get behind this a little bit. I don't like this either, though. I don't like it. You know,
keep your head up, Vaughn. Just keep your head up. See how he's.
That's one
like that?
Where okay, keep I can say up. There's some gray there. There's definitely some gray, and he could probably have avoided it and not ducked his head a little bit. But I still, Aaron Rodgers didn't fall to the ground. It wasn't that forcible. He didn't fall to the ground. So don't throw your flag to the ground. That was a big moment in the game. The Rams had a little momentum right there, and they're about to get them in second and long, and. You know, there you go, 15 yards, and I think, Green Bay ran out some more clock.
But if falling to the ground is part of the rule, I hope it never gets to that point because then they'll be flopping all over the place like fish, like soccer players.
Yeah.
Anytime they get breathed on, they'll take a dive and injure themselves while they take a dive. All right, let's take a break. We'll take a quick look at the Week 13 Power Rankings when this Wednesday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
Nothing the passer. Horrible.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask! Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Feats of Strength, a special Big Plays, Big Guys edition. Let's go right to Monday night.
Wow.
Rasheem Green. With the Costanza-esque trifecta, he blocks the extra point, he recovers the blocked extra point, and then he takes it to the house for 2 points,
and,
tying the game at 9.
Right.
There
and
it is.
He got the kicker to pull his hamstring. It was really a quadfecta.
And injured the kicker without even touching him. There it is. That was great. All right, this is back in week 3. Check out Fletcher Cox against the
Cowboys. Oh, my gosh.
Cowboys.
I love this.
The strip sack in the end zone. Still a special player. And there he is. Strip sack, recovers it.
Javon Hargrave is the one that really F's the play up. And then Fletcher, special athlete, like you said.
All right, week 9, Colts. Danny Pinter with the touchdown catch. All 306 pounds of him. The ball hangs in the air for a long time. It almost snuck through and hit him in a spot where it really would have caused him to curl up in a ball on the ground.
Some
but he
pressure
makes the
there.
Catch.
Yep.
Monday night, week 11.
Oh, great.
The
catch.
Only bright
sure.
spot for the Giants offensively after the turnover, Andrew Thomas. Look at him. Look at the
big guy go up
him,
and get
look
it.
At him get up and stretch.
Yes.
Make him a tight end.
Oh, right. Man. Yeah.
Same game. Steve McClendon
becomes
the oldest player with the first interception of his career. 35 years old, his first career interception. First time in NFL history, the 300-pound player had a receiving touchdown and a 300-pounder had an interception in the same game. But this is the big guy big play of the year from Thursday night a few weeks back. It didn't count. It was illegal from get-go, as Chris would say. Robert Hunt with the touchdown stretching it out.
That's
and
amazing.
None of it mattered.
No, almost lost his knee in the process.
Because he was not allowed to touch
your
the
house.
Ball.
That was your house, the barn.
He jumped over my barn. He went over the barn. Well done. By the way, we'll be back. I thought we were going to break with that. We're supposed to be talking about the power rankings. You know what? Go to PFT and see the power rankings. Cardinals are still number one. Patriots are still number two. The Packers are up to number three. The entire list is there. You can go drop comments and say how stupid I am. I think we're late enough in the year that we're kind of settling into some understanding of who's good and who's not.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So let's just save more time for other things list, that we want to discuss. Let's take it. Thank you. We'll take a break and we'll continue with PFT Live right after this. Plenty to talk about. Urban Meyer possibly returning to Notre Dame now that the USC job is filled, but the Notre Dame job is open. He did a conference call with LA media yesterday as the Jaguars prepare to face the Rams. I'm not a candidate for the Notre Dame job. Obviously, I spent 6 years of my life there, so great respect for Notre Dame. And as I do, USC, UCLA, like we talked about, but I'm committed to the Jaguars and I'm doing the best that we can to turn this around. When I first saw that, I thought, wait. He's mentioning USC and UCLA. Maybe he wants the UCLA job when Chip Kelly gets fired. First of all, you have to be wanted as a candidate before you can make yourself a candidate. And I think it was very wise and deft by Urban Meyer to say, I'm not a candidate because I don't want to be, when the reality is I've yet to hear that Notre Dame wants him. I don't know that Notre Dame would want him after some of the things that went on this year.
100%. I don't look at him to be qualified for, you know, Notre Dame, what they expect out of their head coaches to even be in that conversation right there. You know, again, I mean, the debacle at Ohio State at the end a little there with how he handled some of those issues. And then, yeah, I just don't see Notre Dame wanting their head coach to be a guy who's grinding with people in a bar. That just doesn't seem like the kind of guy they're trying to put out for their Irish Catholic school. That doesn't seem like it's really the message they're trying to put out there. So I don't see that happening, as great as a coach as he is. And he recruited me when he was at Notre Dame. But they're not looking for club grinders to be the head coach there. Yeah, he liked that?
Moving along. As it relates to coaching pay in the NFL, because one of the things that we're looking at as it relates to college coaches getting more and more and more, what impact will it have on NFL coaches? And regardless of what's happening at the college level, because NFL coaches at the top of the game are still in a different stratosphere. Chris, I'm told very reliably by a very good source, not to be confused with my usual bad sources, $25 million is coming within the next couple of years for the top coaches in the NFL. Right now, there are three who, when you factor in all the payments they know about and the payments they don't know about, there are three who are north of $15 million. It's just a matter of time before multiple coaches, Chris, are at $25 million. And it's a good deal. Look at it this way. Jared Goff's making 33.5. Would you rather have Jared Goff at 33.5 or Bill Belichick at 25?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I would think Bill Belichick is dancing around that 25 number or getting close to it. I would bet you he's north of 20. But you're right.
He's north of 20.
And yes. And what these coaches do, sacrifice, the hours they put in. Man, if they're good, they deserve to be compensated. They are basically the CEOs of those organizations. And I have no problem with that.
All right, let's take a break. When we return, we're going to draft the quarterbacks and coaches with the most at stake as the final 6 weeks of the regular season arrive. We'll be back with more PFT Live right after this.
I guess I just got a faith in Brian Flores and company that they're going to give the Panthers offense some issues this weekend.
Well, you will see me doing this multiple times on Sunday. Look into the camera. Look into the screen.
Please.
Coming from my
open
studio,
it up for real, too, so I can see that hairy chest with those pecs.
God. Good Lord. That is not an actual photograph. Good God. I was so wrong about the Panthers, too. That was one of the games. I think we split 3-3. The six games on which we disagreed.
Unbelievable.
I was so wrong about the Panthers. Kudos to the Dolphins for shutting down Cam. And my goodness. All right. Coaches or quarterbacks with the most at stake the final 6 weeks of the season. That is our draft for today. And we have a trivia question for those of you out there who don't like it when we skip past the trivia. Here it is, Chris. Two teams last season finished the regular season on 6-game winning streaks. Name one of them.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's a good... I'm going to go with Buffalo. Buffalo? And let me see if I can get the other one just before you tell me the answer.
I got the other one.
Is it the Colts?
What's the music playing for? Somebody hit the wrong button. They hit the wrong button. The Packers. I just figured they were 13-3. There's a good chance they finished the season with six straight wins.
It was so the Packers. Wow, look at us all football knowledge and stuff. We're pretty special that way.
It didn't get either of them to the Super Bowl, but it did allow them to go into the playoffs feeling pretty good about themselves. All right, final 6 weeks of the season, Chris. You get the first pick. Who quarterback or coach needs to have a great finish the most?
There's a lot of tough ones or good ones. I guess there's a lot to pick from is what I'm saying. I think the one I'm going to go with Tua. I am. I think that's right off the bat. I mean, Miami's hot. I don't know if everybody realizes second longest winning streak in football, only behind the New England Patriots right now. Defense is absolutely balling and kicking butt. And Tua is playing well. I mean, it's not special, but it's good. And if they can continue to string together wins here, and I'm not even saying they got to get in the playoffs, but if they end the year, you know, at 500 or above, and he has this end of the year push, I think it could go a long way into maybe saving his job and maybe having a future in Miami. So I'll go with Tua to lead it off there.
Your comments will make the card-carrying members of Tuanon very happy. I will say this, though. I'm still concerned about his durability. That's what I'm concerned about. He's played well. And they closed the door on Deshaun Watson. What a surprise. You don't have that distraction for Tua anymore or the organization, and they can get behind him, and they're not expecting Deshaun Watson to ride in on a white horse. And that's when the winning streak began.
It is.
The moment the door shut on Deshaun Watson is when they started winning football games one after another after another after another. Now four in a row. They got two more at home, and then they have the Saints on a Monday night. Right. First one for me. I could sandbag you on this one, but I'm jumping on it while I can.
Go ahead.
Mike McCarthy.
Because
you look at the Cowboys' schedule. You look at the adversity they're currently dealing with. You look at the fact that there are going to be teams out there that are interested in Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator. McCarthy had better have a good finish. If he misses the playoffs, Chris, and I don't think it's crazy talk at this point to suggest that they may not even get in, because they could get picked off by Washington and not be one of the ones that gets 5, 6, or 7 seed. If they don't get in, I wouldn't be stunned if McCarthy's done and Kellen Moore becomes the coach.
Oh, I mean, if they fall apart, you're right. I mean, I would agree with you. That would make me concerned if I was in the Mike McCarthy fan club, for sure. You know, yes, it hasn't looked good lately, certainly. We know early in the year he had all the, you know, clock management issues and all of that. So, yes, I would think the cards would be stacked against them a little bit there if they did not get in with the way they started, for sure. I'm kind of going, like, I feel like on a similar path here. I'm going to go with Kevin Stefanski. I think I am. I'm going to go right there. I mean, again, Cleveland's one of the more disappointing teams in football. We know that. You know, he's an offensive mind. The offense is sputtering, like, big time. They don't pass the ball that well. Baker Mayfield, you know, at the end of last year showed development, but I think we'd all agree it's kind of hasn't been much progress. And this year has been all over the place to where, yeah, I think if they finish, I'm not saying he gets fired, but man, even if they don't finish well, it's going to be all hot seat talk going into next year in this offseason.
I want to go quarterbacks, but some of these coaches with what they have riding on it, I think, have concerns. Pete Carroll in Seattle, he's one of the guys north of $15 million right now. And maybe the buyout saves him. Maybe it does. Maybe it's too much to pay Pete Carroll to not coach your team. So maybe they keep him around for another year. But how they handle these final six games, I think, goes a long way toward assessing whether or not there's reason to believe that it can be better next year. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll have round three of the coach or quarterback under the most pressure to finish strong when PFT Live finishes right after this. All right, there are the first two rounds. Chris, you are up with round three. Coach or quarterback with the most at stake in the final 6 weeks of the season?
Man, there's so many, like, good. It's really hard. We could go a few rounds here. I mean, Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz, Mike Zimmer, Vic Fangio. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater. I think I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford. You know, not that he's in danger of not being the quarterback of the Rams next year, but he's not helping his perception slash reality here with the way he looks lately. And, of course, their team kind of falling apart and him making the majority of the critical mistakes. You know, to me, if this doesn't start turning around, he's going to set himself up a little bit like in Detroit where people are just going to go, oh, well, he's Matthew Stafford. He'll make mistakes in a big moment and find a way to screw it up. So from that standpoint, he's got a lot to lose.
For me, I'm going to go positive.
Okay.
Taylor Heinicke. Okay. He's got the opportunity to make himself the starter unquestioned in Washington next year. And if he can take them to the playoffs, and it's not as crazy as it sounds right now, and they're technically in right now, they could still win the division.
Yeah.
If he can take them to the playoffs, he may be the guy next year. He's got a lot riding on this, plus future contract, etc.
Very good one.
Let me throw one at you that you may not have thought of.
Yeah.
Because we see one-and-done coaches on a semi-regular basis. Not as rare as you would think. David Culley, Dan Campbell, Robert Saleh. I think those three guys need to be concerned about how things go the final 6 weeks.
Wow. I hope not.
Don't you?
I hope. I know. They're probably in this day and age, but I hope not.
That's it for now. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.